What can we do to make that number 1,000? That's the kind of stuff we really focus on. We have tools and analytics within our dashboard to kind of help guide you with that and, you know, provide insight onto what strategies are needed to get to that place. But also, I think what makes a lot of sense is to have the right team around you for independent artists. You got to have a really good manager, obviously a great distributor, a good entertainment lawyer, a good publicist, and a good online marketing and social media strategist. If you have those five people in your camp, you're off to a good start.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the first part of my conversation with Jesse Flores. My next guest was recently named VP, Artist and Label Partnerships at Intercept Music. He's a seasoned music industry executive with over 2 decades of experience in business development, artist partnerships, and label relations. As Senior Director of Label and Business Development at Virgin Music Group, he played a pivotal role in securing and managing relationships with high-profile artists and independent labels, working with artists such as Stephen Marley, Slum Village, Carla Morrison, Dax, and more. With a background in both tech and sound, he's built tools that treat music not just as art, but as a powerful business asset. His name is Jesse Flores. And in this episode, we talk about what it really means for artists to own their sound, why marketing is part of the creative process, and how the right tools can help great music get the recognition it deserves. As always, if you have questions for my guest, you're welcome to reach out through the links in the show notes. If you have questions for me, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com, where you'll find a lot of ways to get in touch. Plus, subscribing to the newsletter will let you know when the new podcasts are available, along with other interesting bits of audio-related news. And if you're getting some value from listening, the best ways to show your support are to share this podcast with a friend and leave an honest review. Both those things really help, and I'd love to feature your review on future podcasts. You can leave one either in written or in voice format from the podcast's main page. I would so appreciate that. And now, here's my conversation with Jesse Flores. Welcome, Jesse. Thanks for joining me today. I appreciate it. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me, Jody. Glad to be here.
That's good. I'm glad that you're here. Yeah. I usually ask my guests, very first thing that I ask is if you have an early memory of how sound moved you. Do you have one of those?
I do, and it has to do with the first time I actually, saw a live performance. I was very young. It was my first concert ever. I was 7 years old, and it was the Jackson's Victory Tour. And obviously at the time, Michael Jackson was probably the biggest artist in the planet, and I was young, but I was a fan. I, obviously heard his songs on the radio, and it was probably the first album that I had my parents buy for me. So I was familiar with the songs, also watching the videos on MTV when MTV was really getting hot and starting off in the early 80s. And I even watched, I think he had like a special for his Thriller music video premiere, which was on MTV at the time. And it was a big deal. And I remember that. And then I think the next step was actually going to a show. I think my mom just really figured out that I'm a fan of this guy. Let me stand in line and buy tickets. And she bought me tickets. And it was just an amazing experience because I had never been to a show. And this one was actually in a huge stadium. So it was just mind-blowing to me at the time to be there with all these people that were fans as well, seeing Michael Jackson and his brothers on stage doing their thing and all the dance choreography and everything, putting on this major performance and event per se, and all the the pyrotechnics and all the effects and everything. I was just really impressed, and I think that's when I really figured out that I love this music thing and it's something I'm gonna enjoy for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I can imagine. And actually, I remember going to a really early Michael Jackson tour. My parents had us in the nosebleed section, like my
same
sister
thing.
And I. Yeah.
Same exact thing. We didn't have the best seat, but we were in the house.
Yeah, exactly. But they had a huge video screen up, so you could sort of see what was going on. Like they were this big, right?
Yeah,
but
totally.
I remember those days, yes. But that got you into A&R and music, and what was your progression from when you heard that to how you became a musician and working in music yourself?
So I definitely was a fan of music, and my mom especially was. Like, she was always playing music, whether, you know, it's in the house or when we take our little road trip somewhere. She was a big fan of like Motown and, you know, a lot of artists of her time. And I fell in love with the music too. And it came to the point where as I got older into grade school and high school, I started playing musical instruments. I played violin for a while. When I got into high school, it was alto and baritone saxophone. And I got really good at that. And when I got into college, for a semester, I actually was going to major in performance. But as I, you know, realized it in college, I didn't want to like major in that. I wanted to be in the music business per se, but not so much be a performer. So there wasn't a specific curriculum for that at my school at the time. So, you know, I decided to switch my major to management and minor in mass communications, and just kind of figure out my way to get into the music business was joining an organization called Student Government Productions, which was pretty much a booking agency run by students at the school that brought talent to the school to perform. And that was an amazing experience for me. It's kind of what I would say would be my first step into the music business, because I got to learn how to work with artists. And, you know, when we bring the artists, I was the one that was going to take them around to, you know, basically pick them up at the airport and take them to the hotel and all that good stuff. And these were like artists that were getting a lot of airplay and were pretty relatively well known. So that experience alone was great. And because of that, I was able to get CMJ Magazine at the time, which we got at the school. And I noticed that a distributor called PolyGram was looking for a college up in North Central Florida. And that's where I was going to school. I applied for that and I got the job, and I was a senior in college. So I know I didn't have that much time to work with, but I got my foot in the door. I got an actual job, even though it was part-time. And from that point on, that's kind of where I rose the ladder per se, and within the PolyGram system, to eventually moving out to LA, to eventually getting a full-time position and starting my career in the music business.
Hi, this is Nikolai Klock, and you're listening to the Audio Branding Podcast, a great place to learn about how powerful sound can be. If you want to understand how to harness the power in your own life, keep listening. Jody's doing an awesome job here. I hope you tune in.
Wow, yeah, that's quite the progression. What did you love most about it? What about that, about helping the artists find their sound and get the jobs and, you know, what about that appealed to you?
At the time, definitely just being part of the process. You know, I didn't know really the intricacies or just the, you know, what it took to really be in the music business. I just, you know, if I heard something on the radio or I saw a video, I liked the track. I didn't know what went on behind the scenes to get it to that point. And that's what distribution was really all about. My entire pedigree has been in distribution. And I'm glad to say that I'm going to be approaching my 30th year in the business. And, you know, when it comes to distribution, you really learn the business side of the business. You learn about, you know, the early parts of the album process, where you have an artist, you have a release schedule, you hear that they're working on an album. We actually get an advanced version of the album, which was amazing to me because I got to hear the music from artists that I love before it even hit the streets per se. And being a part of that process, coming up with a marketing plan specifically for my territory, for my region, which I was expected to be the expert of, and coming up with different activations, different marketing opportunities to really, you know, bring awareness to the new project and for what the artist was doing. And then when we actually did get an artist in town, I was the one setting up all the meetings and the, you know, the retail appearances. Maybe we bring by a radio station, do an interview, and then obviously a concert at night. So all those things together was a really great learning experience for me as I was getting involved in the music biz.
Oh, I'll bet. Yeah, that's quite a lot of things to be thinking about while you're helping the artist. My goodness. But over 30 years, there's got to have been a lot of changes. Can you talk about some of those changes?
That's the one thing about the music industry. There's constant change. Things are always changing and you just got to adapt to it. It's inevitable. And part of that, you know, change can be good, it could be bad. Either way, you got to learn to deal with the adversity. For change for me, in my particular situation, I had a lot to do with consolidations and mergers within the companies that I worked for. I was working for PolyGram, and then a year into my tenure there, Universal Music bought PolyGram. So there was a huge merger where literally half the company got laid off. It was a huge shock. You know, it was really my first time working at a company. And, you know, I had the opportunity to, you know, to either stay in Los Angeles, but get a demotion as far as title, but maintain my salary, or I could move to Miami and, you know, and start my career over there. And I really had a good time to, you know, sit down and think about it and weigh the pros and cons. And at the end of the day, I decided to stay in LA, which was a blessing and the right decision, because if I had moved to Miami, I probably would have lost my job in the next year or two because they closed that office down. So,
oh, really?
Just,
okay.
Yeah, it's just one of those
there
things
you go.
Where, yeah, I was like, okay, I really wanted that title that I got and I worked hard for, but I don't want to move out of LA because I knew LA was one of the places to be if you wanted to be in the music industry.
Yeah, yeah. So in LA, who were some of the artists that you were representing and making sure that they got their airplay or they got their concert or their, I don't know, CD signing, I guess, at the time? I don't know.
Yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah, this was back when we had record stores like Tower and Virgin Records.
Yeah.
And we set up a lot of opportunities and it was a great time. But there were so many great artists on Universal Records at the time. So we had artists like Nelly, Three Doors Down, Godsmack, everybody on Cash Money Records was a big record label at the time. Who else? Actually, look at one of these.
Oh, yeah, I guess they're behind
Boyz
you. Yeah.
Man, yeah. 98 Degrees was another one. That was a big pop group at the time. So,
okay, yeah.
Yeah. All these guys, you know, we literally saw them when they had a demo, and a year later, they're like superstars. So just being a part of that, it was amazing to me. And then, you know, for your involvement, we got a plaque, which was also amazing to me because I love plaques. It's definitely something I cherish.
I can see from behind
you.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's a great wall, by the way. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So music distribution has definitely gone through the ringer. Like, and especially now, because I remember I had a songwriting website from like 95 until 2016, and I watched the Napster thing happen. So, and I know that people behind the scenes were feeling it really badly. So the artists out front, I mean, they must have been, the competition must have been incredible, and getting listening ears on what they were doing must have been really hard. So how, as what you do, how do you help them with that?
Basically, you know, when you have artists that you work with at the level I was at the time, you know, they were really receptive to us because we had a team just nationwide of people where, you know, they bring them into our market and we were the experts in our region. So we knew exactly where to take them, you know, what stations made the most sense, you know, what retailers were really supporting them, where we were selling the records. You know, we want to make sure that we set up like an in-store per se at the right location where we have the right partner on the radio side to promote it and have a great turnout. Because what you want to do with these type of events, you want to make sure you have a line around the building when the artist is there and just to create that scene and commotion of a huge event. And that's exactly what we did. And in a market like LA, which is obviously a major market, we had no problems not only bringing the key artists that made the most sense, but also creating the events and the excitement needed to really make a mark on that project. And at that time, you know, just having that artist in place at our locations and making sure that everything was a success and that they would come back the next time around, you know, when they had the next record to promote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you were really successful at what you were doing. So congratulations on that, because I know it was a lot of hard work.
Thank you. And long nights as well.
I can imagine. Yeah. But you ended up opening your own company as well, right? So what made you make that transition?
Well, I actually moved over to EMI Music after I was at Universal. So I was a head of urban marketing over there. And that was my first time as a national international position as opposed to being just a regional guy. And I was able to spread my wings there because not only did I work a lot of the projects on Capitol Records and Virgin Records, But what we did, and I think this is what you might be referring to, is we were able to offer third-party distribution deals to independent artists. So, which isn't really something that was popular at the time. So, you know, any artist that was coming off their major label deal but still wanted to release music, we gave them that opportunity to do that. And not only just put out their music and using our pipes, but also have major label services. So we had Capitol Records doing radio promotion, having their main publicist on these records, and having the whole support of the marketing team behind each project and release, which is really influential as far as, you know, starting that whole situation where now you have a ton of companies that are doing independent distribution nowadays and also using that same label services model.
Are you enjoying this podcast? If so, it would really help me out if you'd give it a review. The best place to do that in written format is at the bottom of the audiobrandingpodcast.com page. And if you want to do that in voice format, there's a link in the ending paragraph at the top of that same page. I would so appreciate that. It helps me to know what you'd like to hear more of and why you're listening in the first place. As podcasters, we rarely know who's actually listening, so it helps me to know that I'm not just speaking into the void. Thanks for that. And now, back to the show. So Intercept Music is part of their label, or is it your own?
So Intercept Music is an independent distribution company that's global, that was started by our co-founders, Ralph Tashian and Todd Turner. And they brought me in to head up artist and label partnerships. So it definitely is an independent distribution company, but it's owned by those two.
I see. Okay. I wanted to make sure that I understood that. Yeah. So now that you are doing that, I mean, what is distribution like today? Because you're streaming, right? There's no discs anymore. There's no, are live appearances even as popular as they used to be?
Definitely. I think live performance is a vital part of the music business nowadays, especially if you're an artist and you're using it as an income stream. But yeah, streaming, digital age, it just totally took a turn in the early 2000s, and it's just had a major impact with distribution and one of the main reasons for the change. I mean, we literally went from six major distributors back in when I first started to now there's just three. So the industry was literally cut in half. Ton of consolidation, companies buying other companies, and it's to gain market share, you know, which is obviously a part of business and is going to happen. But, you know, nowadays, when it comes to the streaming age, the crazy part about it, which I look at as a plus and obviously something that's very, I guess, amazing in my opinion, is you have access to millions of songs in the palm of your hand, just in your phone. Like, you know, that obviously wasn't available back in the day. The downside is that anybody can release music. So there's just so much clutter out there. You kind of sift through it. And, you know, in order to rise above the noise, I think the key thing is to have a good distribution partner like Intercept Music that can help you solve that issue and really grow your career.
Yeah, I would imagine it would be pretty integral to a career at all. So when an artist is only making like 0.001 cent on a stream, how do they make a living? I got to ask you.
That's a great question. They got to have a lot of streams coming from a lot of different platforms. That's the whole thing. And that's something we really focus on at Intercept, is really devising a plan for each of these platforms, you know, because not everybody is going to perform as well as some other platforms. You know, one might have great success on YouTube, but not so much on Spotify and Apple Music. So what we want to do is really sit down with the artist, kind of figure out what they've done up to this point and what we can do to really augment what they've been doing previously and help take it to the next level. So maybe it's throwing a few ad dollars behind a Spotify and really shouting out, you know, Spotify on social media, or maybe have an influencer campaign on TikTok, just all these different avenues and tools that you can utilize to really figure out what can I do to make my music, bring awareness to it, and also obviously get the streams needed to make a decent living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's probably really hard. So when an artist is working with you, are there things that they can do to make it easier for you to work with them?
Absolutely. I mean, ideally, you want to have an artist that really knows that they're getting in the music business, the business side of it. If you're independent, you really got to have a great work ethic. You really have to work hard to be successful as an independent artist. I think you need to have a vision You need to set goals that are realistic. You know, you don't, obviously everybody wants to go platinum and sell millions of records, but maybe you're just starting out and you have 500 fans on Spotify that are followers. What can we do to make that number 1,000? That's the kind of stuff we really focus on. We have tools and analytics within our dashboard to kind of help guide you with that and, you know, provide insight onto what strategies are needed to get to that place. But also, I think what makes a lot of sense is to have the right team around you for independent artists. You got to have a really good manager, obviously a great distributor, a good entertainment lawyer, a good publicist, and a good online marketing and social media strategist. If you have those five people in your camp, you're off to a good start.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it sounds like there is a big team behind someone.
This has been part one of our interview. I hope you'll tune in next week for part two. Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.